what we're going to be talking about today is technology and medicine and what's happening, and more importantly, will it work? So I want to start with this. I want to ask you guys a question. What is this? And I'm going to put this picture up here. So if you guys have any ideas, shout out what you think this thing is. It's a, somebody said a rolling something or other. That's good. It's a wheel, so well done. Something for miles. Somebody in the green, what? A tape measure. Okay, so somebody thinks it's a tape measure. It's a unicycle rickshaw. That would be the most painful unicycle. I don't think so. Let me put up another picture. This is another example of one of these. And that, I don't know, that actually makes it even harder for me now that I think about it. But I think if I put this up, you guys get a sense of it? Yeah, absolutely. See, that one student's like, see, I was right. I told you, it's got that. Yeah, these are three examples of pedometers that are through the ages. This was actually a Roman pedometer, if you can believe it. So you had to actually hold that handle. And I think this is interesting to me because this shows you how technology progresses. Okay. Now I want to show you this.
Technology has given us an unprecedented window into the human body. But on a day-to-day basis, we're still in the dark about our own health. We are changing that.
You okay?
Do you feel okay?
What if instead of fearing the worst when you notice something out of the ordinary, you could identify the condition yourself? Getting the right diagnosis would save you worry.
It says it's roseola.
And an unnecessary doctor's visit.
Rest at home, it's okay.
Instead of hearing about a viral outbreak on the news, imagine you got an alert that was tailored to your family's needs. It would also give you advice about what to do next. What if you had a way to identify what was wrong right away?
It says it's 103.8.
A way to get all of the information you need to understand the situation. And in serious cases, you would know when and where to seek help.
It recommends taking it to the urgent care.
We're building a way for people to check their bodies as often as they check their email. It's all possible, and it's only the beginning.
So, I think it's funny, because I know some of you are laughing about some of that stuff, but I would argue that if you went 30 years back and you showed people a Fitbit, or an Apple Watch, or a Microsoft Band 2, and said, this is what we're going to be doing in 30 years, they'd probably be looking at you like, you guys are looking at this. We are not this far off from technology that works in this way. And I think Scanadu, which is coming out, that's an example of how far we've come in such a short time. You know, technology to enhance health is not new. I mean, as I showed you guys, even in Roman times, we had pedometers. But it has advanced a little bit from Roman times. And what I want to spend a little bit of time today is talking a little bit about why that matters, where it's going to go, and can it actually work in practice? So let's get started. So let's start. Why does it matter? I mean, is this something we as physicians need to be doing? Well, let me show you some data, and I think this is critical to understand. You know, if you look at the recent stuff that's come out, it's very, very interesting. About 33% of our patients want physicians to have access to technology that remotely monitors their health. So a third of our patients out there, when they were surveyed, said that they want this. And then another 40% want to have access to medical emergency technology, right? So why does this matter? At least one of the things that's very, very clear is that there is a growing desire and need from our patient populations to have technologies that are in, that they utilize and that, most importantly, we can use to monitor health, okay? So I think that's the first thing about why it matters. But there are other reasons. You know, there are a lot of what we call external drivers. So how many of you know what CMS stands for? Okay, there's like two doctors in the back that are like, oh yeah. So CMS is the Center for Medicaid and Medicare Services. And you guys will care about that a great deal because CMS is what funds almost all residency training in this country. So when you get paid as a resident, as hopefully all of you will in the next few years, that's because of CMS. And CMS is part of the government. Right, Medicaid, Medicare. And so CMS is a very big external driver. They kind of tell us where we're going with healthcare, and we kind of have to listen to them because they also provide Social Security, right? Which is the largest single sort of insurer when you consider Medicare and Medicaid and Social Security for healthcare in this country. So when they talk, we have to listen. And what they said is patient and family engagement is a crucial concept for improving health outcomes and quality. So they're telling us that we need to engage the patients and the family more. And that's interesting because what it used to be the traditional way of the patient just coming in to see us and us finding out what's going on then, that's going to go away. That's not going to be the majority of what we do. And then insurers, who are those people who pay you when Medicaid and Medicare aren't paying you, right, to see patients. And they are all about now performance markers, right? They want to know that 80% of you, the Blue Cross patients you see, Blue Cross wants to know that you're monitoring their hemoglobin A1C for diabetes and you've got them under 7.0. And if you don't, they're not going to pay you. Or they're going to pay you less than they pay the rest of the doctors in your area because those doctors are able to achieve it. So you're going to need to be monitoring more, and you're going to need to be able to track and affect these things more. So that's part of it, but there's other people like Charles Safran, MD, who is the president of the American Informatics Association, and he said patients are our most underutilized resource, and he's absolutely right. Patients, if we engage them, can be massive, massive drivers of resource. So just a quick question, show of hands, how many of you guys have a Fitbit? Okay, so about, I'd say a third of the audience. How many of you have an Apple Watch or a Microsoft Smart Band? Yeah, you're medical students, so you're like, the couple of you are like, I got it as a Christmas present for my dad, you know. but I expect that in the next 2 years, the hand raising is going to be about 100%, right? And if you were to just go and you look at the people, even the physicians who are here, you know, I would bet you that it's somewhere in the neighborhood of 40 to 50% of physicians are doing that. So these are examples of how we utilize patients as a resource. And when Jay Sanders talked about this, and he's the president of the American Telemedicine Association, he said, we need to bring the exam room to where patients are. Couldn't agree more. We need to stop thinking of the idea that health only occurs when the patient sees us, and that management of disease and maintenance of health only occurs when we see the patient. That's not going to be the role in the future. So the next question, I think, so you understand now why it matters, because patients want it and because it's really moving us, external drivers are moving in that direction. But the real question is, will it work? I mean, what does the data show as far as our ability to use these kind of technologies for patients? So if we're going to talk about data, we have to understand where we want to go and what patients want. And I think I've already alluded to the fact that there's two areas that we seem to see, wearable technology and, of course, the rise of the health app, right? So these are the two things that I think when we talk about where data and technology is going in terms of medicine, these are the things that are happening. Let's talk about wearable technology. You know, wearable technology can come in two really different types of form. You can have technology that's designed to monitor health, that is to enhance and reinforce healthy behaviors and that should be occurring. Any of you guys ever use something called MyFitnessPals? Right? So at least a few of you know what it is, right? And those things are a perfect example of monitoring health, right? They're designed to help you track calories, to identify what you're eating, designed to help you track your weight, to see if what you're eating is translating into a cause and effect with whether your weight is going up or down, helping you to set markers, goals, and reminders to tell you if you're on track as far as your health goes. And then you have things that are designed to identify and monitor disease. And these are far more intriguing to me because these are newer, right? These are the things that provide clinical data both to the patient and to the physician, and they can guide care. So I talked about MyFitnessPals as an example of an app, but here's an example of a biomedical technology. And have you guys heard of Sensoria? All right, so Sensoria makes these fitness socks now, and you can actually buy these. They're about, I think about a year ago, they were about $149. But these socks actually use this magnetic anklet sensor that's there, and they can actually track your cadence as you're running. And they can track where your foot land is and what the pressure is in the various parts of your foot. And what's really interesting is they can tell you your weight distribution between your right and left legs. That's great. That's the collection of data. But what they can also do is it can provide you audio cues as far as if your running stride is off. or tell you if you're putting weight in the wrong, in the wrong areas and things like that. So I think this is an example of not something that not only monitors health, but allows it to give feedback to you as the patient to adjust what you're doing. So that's kind of cool to me. Anybody have any idea what that is? Well, I wrote it up there. This is going to be the future of what we use for getting EKGs. This is called the Zio XT, and it's about the size of a Band-Aid, okay? And it can actually do a 14-day heartbeat monitor. It's essentially like a Holter monitor for the heart, but it's about the size of the Band-Aid. It can be put on the chest, right? No leads, no box, no nothing like that. It's water-resistant, right? And in studies that looked at this, they found that it's actually 57% more likely to give you diagnostic information that's valuable than a traditional Holter. Okay? So this is an example of something that's actually going to monitor health as well. Because if you've got patients who have pacemakers, patients who have heart arrhythmias, they can wear these. The way we currently do these things, right, is they have to either dial in, right, using the phone, or they have to come to the office and get their pacemakers checked or get their monitors checked, or if they're doing a Holter, they have to come in, get those put on, get all this stuff, and it's very, very time-consuming and expensive. And, you know, it puts out reports like these right here that can be used by the doctor, and these get sent electronically to the doctor. So the patient doesn't have to come in to give you these reports or for you to get these reports off the device. They can be sent wirelessly. So those are some examples of monitoring health. What about monitoring disease? Well, one of the newest items that's kind of been put out in 2015 is something called ATOM, okay? And so what ATOM is intelligent asthma management, okay? And so it's really interesting. There are these small light trackers that you can wear on pendants on your chest, and it can actually track your symptoms and tell you whether your chest is, you're having increased excursion of the chest. It can also track if you're having wheezing because there's more friction and things like that. And then what it can do is it can connect that information from the sensor into the app, and then the app can report those things out to physicians. So anyone here have asthma? Okay, so yeah, it's just me and the bad gene pool apparently. But you know, if you have asthma, you know that management of your symptoms and tracking symptoms is such a critical element of whether or not you're going to end up in the hospital with an acute asthmatic break or not. So we are very, very keen as physicians when it comes to asthma of knowing how patients' symptoms are going, right? But the problem is that the only time we can find out is if A, the patient comes into the office, and B, they've kept a log of that information for us and they remember to bring it into the office, right? And that's it doesn't matter if you're talking about asthma or diabetes or hypertension, it's the same, isn't it? This is great because this eliminates all of those elements. The patient doesn't need to track it, the devices do. The patient doesn't need to come in to provide those logs, they can be sent to the physician. And the physician can look at that information and then reach back out to the patient and make changes. Think about how useful that is. Think about how much time that saves you, right? Can we get to a place where family medicine appointments are actually about identifying disease and initiating treatments that are very, very invasive? What I would call the more complex medicine, and move away from a place where we're simply doing the monitoring elements, the low-level things. Now, one of the things I think is interesting is what are the implications of this when we talk about scope of practice? Because last year when I talked to the family medicine student group, right, all of you guys were very concerned about expansion of our nurse practitioners' care and things like that. And I can't help but wonder if maybe if we start to separate out the low-level monitoring elements, right, the management elements that go into chronic disease, and instead we focus on the high level, is it possible that we don't even have to worry about scope of practice in the same way? That maybe we can work with nurse practitioners and PAs and have them handle a lot of the interaction, tracking, monitoring that comes out of devices like these while we're working on things that might require a higher complexity of capability. Interesting to me. Here's something. This is called not the IT bra, as many of the doctors I show this to, but it's called the IT bra, and I want to play this for you so you can see.
A new technology that could revolutionize breast cancer screening is about to begin clinical trial here in the Bay Area. Rather than a mammogram or ultrasound, this system can be used at home with potentially life-saving information transmitted through a smartphone. Soon, an experimental technology could help thousands of women and doctors screen for breast cancer in a new way. It's called the IT bra.
So you'll be putting that on, so It's now centered over you.
Company CEO Rob Royer says the patches can be worn inside any normal bra.
It's a wearable device with a number of sensors that check what happens with your circadian patterns of heat change on your breasts over time.
Royer says the heat changes correlate to the accelerated cell activity associated with breast tumors. The results are then processed using sophisticated algorithms and transmitted to a smartphone.
You wear the device for a few hours, and that information is automatically communicated to your physician.
Because the system is heat-based, developers believe it may also offer advantages for some women with denser breast tissue, which can be more difficult to image using traditional mammography.
So, not many of you have probably had the pleasure of having a mammogram. But if you talk to any woman over the age of 45 who has, they'll tell you they're painful, they're inconvenient, and often they don't always give us the information we need. How much easier would it be if we have technology that's implanted in our clothing that can monitor these things for us and give us a heads up if something abnormal is going on? I find this fascinating. When we talk about device integration, there are a couple companies that are leading the charge on this. And you guys know, obviously, everybody knows Apple, right? So Apple last year came out with something called HealthKit. And what was really interesting was this is a system-level integration into their devices, right? So it's not software. It's actually a system platform within their operating system that other device makers and other software makers can just hook into. And it creates a common platform or a hub for health. How many of you guys have actually looked at the HealthKit app on your iPhone? Yeah, it's kind of cool, isn't it? I mean, you can see some really interesting data points and things like that that can come out of it. What's really interesting is that they've paired it with something called ResearchKit, where people like the Mayo Clinic or other large organizations, Harvard and Boston, they can actually do research at a distance with patients by taking information that comes in through HealthKit and then applying that to look at statistical data outside of their normal patient populations. But there are challenges when you talk about this kind of stuff, right? And the number one is HIPAA. One of the things that I think we as physicians need to do, I don't know if any of you got a chance to go to Congress of Delegates, but I really believe that someone needs to put together a resolution from the ACOP that talks about the fact that every piece of software that is involved in the care of a patient that is an app or something like that needs to have universal language regarding HIPAA and that there needs to be universal protections, security protections. Because we've already seen what happens when credit card breaches like Target's happened last year and how much consternation that causes the public. What happens when it's the patient's medical information? That's when people really get scared, and that's when doctors start to lose their jobs. So HealthKit was a really interesting start, and this kind of information is important because, again, we know that in the last 5 years, apps have been coming out, and clearly I've already shown you that the general population wants this stuff. But here's what's really interesting. If you look at the data, there were 500 million smartphone owners last year that used at least one app. 500 million. And in the next 3 years, that's going to triple to about 1.5 billion. That is approximately something like about a third to a half of all the people on this planet Earth. So this is not a fad. This is not something that is a flash in the pan. This is going to become par for the course. This isn't going away. But here's a possible problem. In looking at some studies that were done with physicians, where they polled about 1,500 physicians a couple of years ago, 37% of them had prescribed an app to a patient, only about a third of them. But what's concerning to me is that 42% wouldn't do this because of a lack of what they perceived as regulatory oversight, and another 21% wouldn't because of, they said there's no longitudinal data. So one of the things I think is important to recognize is I don't know about this whole longitudinal data thing, because we're talking about apps that monitor information. If you're talking about whether those apps are going to improve outcomes and stuff like that, I'm not sure that they necessarily are. But I'm not sure that that's the goal of utilizing these things. I think the goal of these is creating new pathways for the information to be processed, to reduce the physician's time in the office with the patient, to reduce the patient's need to come in for testing, to come in for discussion of a simple thing like, oh, yep, we got your hemoglobin A1C last week. Looks good. See you later. Have fun, right? So I'm not sure we need data to show effectiveness. I mean, that would be ideal in reducing morbidity and mortality. I think these things need to happen anyways. I do agree about that regulatory oversight thing. So if we're talking about apps, then what are some characteristics that we can talk about for good patient apps? Well, a lot of articles have been put out about this and, you know, have asked this question of what should we be looking for when we recommend a health app to a patient? The first thing I would say is obviously usability. Is the app easy to use? And if you guys are used to using apps and things like that, how many of you guys, by the way, have interacted with EMRs? Yeah, exactly. How many of you guys think EMRs are just the greatest thing in the world? Yeah, exactly, right? Well, guess what? You're not alone. That's how physicians who practice are, right? And the number one reason we hate EMRs is because the usability stinks, right? These are not designed to care for a patient. They're designed to abstract data for insurers, healthcare systems, and things like that, right? And secondarily, if you can figure out how to make it work within a 15-minute office visit and still look like you're talking to your patient, good luck, right? Well, we got to make sure that apps that are coming out are easy to use as well. They have to have management capability. So it's got to be functional. It's not something that can just put up pretty ideas and things like that. It's got to be something that can track data and ideally send that data to your physician and ideally give you some feedback about what you should do next. If those things are happening, then we have a very powerful app. They should be safe, and that means that it has to safeguard against poor health outcomes. So we don't want to use like Joe Bob's renal failure app, you know, from Joe Bob's House of Kidney website that tells you, you know, yeah, it's okay to have 16 grams of protein a day. You're doing fine, right? That would concern me, right? So we need to know that the people who are developing these apps are developing them within the confines of what we know is standard medical care, right? And we have to know that they're backed by those powerful organizations that are involved in that. Here's another way to look at it. I love this table, and I'm going to try to blow it up a little bit. It's hard to see, but here are all the indicators when it comes to apps, like promotes patient-provider partnership, you know, harnesses mature concepts, delivers. Here's what are positive qualities. Here's what are negative qualities, and I want to just highlight two that I think are really important. The first is this, promotes patient and provider partnership. A bad app is one that will try to provide its own medical advice. It should never be a situation where the app or the company is providing medical advice or attempting to be a medical practitioner. That's a very dangerous strategy. And then, like I talked about already, is security. I cannot stress enough, if we cannot make the data within these apps secure, we are at great risk for the public losing their trust in both us and the technology we choose to use. So when we talk about how do people assist app, these makers make apps and things like that. And again, I think Apple, and yes, I am an Apple fan. I know you may hate me for it, but I really believe when you look at what Apple's trying to do, I think they're really thinking about some of these things. And we already know how Apple feels about privacy, right? Maybe to the detriment, certainly, of other things. But what Apple came out with just in the last month is something called CareKit. How many of you guys heard about CareKit? Yeah, you might not have. And this is designed to help developers create apps that allow patients to actively manage conditions. And there are four modules here, and I'm just going to actually let Apple talk about it themselves.
Let me give you another example. Surgery.
Hopefully.
One of the things physicians tell us is that one of the most important things affecting outcome of surgery is actually what you do during the recovery process. Yet we go from being monitored by a team of highly trained specialists using leading-edge technology to being discharged with this, a single sheet of paper.
You guys are.
This is actually what happens pretty much across the country. This is your list of things to do, things not to do, which days you're supposed to do them on, and adherence to this is notoriously very poor. So, using the CareKit modules, we've been working with Texas Medical Center, and they've created an app for the phone that guides you through this critical process in a completely different way. It's got a care card, which is your list of things to do every day in checklist form, and as you fill them out, the little heart fills up. It's really nice. It's got a symptom and measurement tracker where you can record information on your progress. You can record things like your temperature to monitor for an infection, or you can use the accelerometer on the iPhone to study range of motion. And then you can share this information with your loved ones who can help support you through this recovery process. And best of all, you can share this information with your physician who will take the results of how you're doing and they will dynamically update your care plan so it changes on the fly, something just not possible with a sheet of paper.
So anybody here know how much it costs to keep a patient in the hospital for one day post-operative surgery? Throw out a number. I hear 6,000, 15, 21. Geez, what kind of surgery are you having? So somewhere between $7,000 and $7,500. So, and what are we doing in that post-op day? We're monitoring their vitals. We're making sure that they're getting up, they're breathing, they're using their spirometers, right? Their incentive spirometers and things like that. How cool would it be if you could send the patient home within a half a day post-operatively and allow them to use an app that tracks this information and tells you what they're doing? How cool would that be for your patients? So they don't have to stay in the hospital and potentially run the risk of getting another infection or being woken up at 3 a.m. for another poke. I think this is really cool stuff. And I don't think it's just Apple that's doing it, but I think Apple right now is the one that's promoting it really, really hard. So where are we headed and what challenges are ahead? Well, there was a study in 2013 that looked at data about patients using personal health technology, and they followed them for 1 year. And it was not the greatest stuff, but it was informative. What they found was that only 30% of patients were sustained users of web or mobile technologies. But those people who stuck with these kind of apps and technologies to monitor things had better weight-related outcomes than those that didn't. And of course, something I've already alluded to, the simpler the technology, the more likely it was to be used. And you know what was the technology that was most used? A weight scale and a pedometer. So we don't need necessarily the greatest, latest sensors and things like that, although I think it's flipping cool. We just need them to start using even simple monitoring technologies that we've had for decades. And we are the future, I think, when you start talking about our patients. 2015, Deloitte did a study looking at 3,600 individuals. Half of them had searched online for medical information. A third of them used technology for health and fitness. And if you're talking about just the millennials, it was about 50% of them. 40% of them used technology to monitor diseases. And 60% of the individuals who did so said it significantly affected their health behavior. Now, that is really interesting, because how many of you have gone in and worked with a patient who doesn't change their behavior year after year, even though they're sick? And they know they're sick, right? So if the data shows that a majority of people are willing to change their health behavior by the use of some of these apps and things like that, I am all for us promoting these kind of things. So what do we want to do? I mean, I've talked a lot about where we can go, but what do we need to do? I think we have to have a master plan. And what you guys can do as students is amazing, because you have one thing that a lot of us don't have: time. You have the time to ask some of these questions, right? You can assess patients and ask them, what kind of devices and software are they already using? And then we can think about and we can say, what kind of data would we want to get? And what would we do with it if we had it? I think that's amazing to me. You can assess yourself as a physician, right? You can say, let me take one issue, and then I'm going to go out. How many of you think about this? I would encourage every one of you to do this, right? Pull out your smartphone sometime later when you have Wi-Fi access and you don't have to pay, right? And say, I'm going to look up all the diabetes apps that are in the App Store, right? Either the Google Play Store or the Apple Store, right? And then start actually downloading them and trying them out, the free ones. Your students, don't pay for anything. And try them out. Because then what you could do is you could go, this sucks, or this is amazing. And then you can do two things. Well, three. You can talk to the company, send them feedback, and go, hey, by the way, your app kind of sucks, right? Or you could send information to the doctors you're working with. And how many of you guys had a chance to relate new technology to a doctor? Show of hands. Couple people. And I'm betting you that when you did it, I'd say 85% of the time, they were like, wow, I did not know this was available. I mean, there's that 15% that are like, you don't know anything, right? I'm just fine with my, you know, whatever ancient thing they're doing, my rigid sigmoidoscope, right? Yeah, it's not fun, folks. But, you know, these are the kind of things you can do, and then see what's going on with them. By the way, do you know what medical schools have the lowest number of medical students that graduate and actually go on to clinical practice? University of California, San Francisco, and University of California, Santa Barbara. You know why? Because Silicon Valley is buying up all these med students because they want people who have knowledge, and they're giving them six and seven figure contracts to be a medical consultant without having practiced a day. Now I know how many of you are like, can I transfer? Western osteopathic medical school is that, are they taking people? No. It's, you know, but that's interesting to me. They think you're valuable even though you haven't spent a single day in clinical practice. So we can do stuff as students that even our physicians can't do because they don't have the time or the knowledge. So what should we do? What's the picture we're painting? Well, here's what I would say. We need technology for healthcare, okay? Our patients want it. I've already told you that. And they're starting to really show us that they need it. And doctors are going to benefit from this. They're going to see patients less frequently in the office. They're going to be able to do more stuff that is meaningful and important and less stuff that I would call tracking, right? And it has to be simple and it has to be secure. We should insist, demand, and force that when people make apps or people develop apps, that there is simplicity and security built into it. And that goes from the simplest app that tracks a symptom to the most complex type of health app like an EMR. And you guys are the ones that need to start yelling about that because no one cares what old Indian doctors want to say, right? Yes, it's true. Even if I like use the accent, you know what? I don't like how you've made this epic EHR, okay? It needs to be much, much better, okay? See, I know, this is what I do, folks. I use racially motivated humor. I apologize. We need it because if we don't have security and we don't have the simplicity, our patients aren't going to use it. And if they don't use it, it's not of any value to us. And I think we have to use it to monitor. And if these apps get really good, these technologies get good, we can act on it. Like if Adam turns out to be really, really good, we can turn around and we can tell the patient via the app, hey, guess what? Your breathing is worse. You're in the yellow zone on your asthma action plan. I want you to start taking an additional medication, which I'm sending to the pharmacy for you, and I want you to increase the use of your rescue inhaler to twice a day for the next 2 weeks. No, you don't need to come in and see me for all of this. I've got the information I need, and I can share with you what you need to do. Right? It's kind of cool. And if we do all these things, yeah, we can paint a medical masterpiece, right? Because then we can spend more time seeing the patient instead of tracking data. And we can care for that patient at a distance more easily and using less of their time, right? And then, most importantly, just like CMS said, we can empower and we can engage our patients and their families. And that is a very, very important thing that we don't do a good job of currently. We still, in this day and age, have patients that come to us expecting we do everything to fix them. We need them to understand they need to do to fix themselves as well. Anybody know what this is, this painting? Yeah, one or two people, right? You've probably all seen it, right? So this is called The Great Wave off Kanagawa, and it's a 17th century painting from Japan. And it's meant to represent an open wave on the sea, right? And you can see in the background there, that's Mount Fuji, right? And here's this giant wave, and here are these ships, right? And I looked at this painting, and I thought, this really spoke to me. Because, you know, I feel like this is where medicine is right now. And this impending wave that's going to crash down onto the ocean and obliterate and obscure this, that's health technology. That wave is here. It's coming now. And we can either be people that are going to get wiped out by this wave, or we can try to be these people who are sailing that sea and maneuvering that wave and making sure that we are riding that technological wave instead of being sort of, you know, scared of it. So that's really all I have to say. I want to thank you for your consideration, and I have a friend of mine with me. I want to leave you with what she has to tell you guys if we don't do this.
Greetings, gluttonous humans. I, Carrot, have watched your kind indiscriminately stuff your chubby faces for far too long. To combat your bad habits, I scienced up a new strain of calorie counter. One that tells you what you're consuming in terms your puny brains can actually understand. One that warns you that you're approaching your daily goal if you open the fridge. One that punishes you financially, aesthetically, and socially, if you dare to overindulge. And best of all, this is the only app in the world that will tell you if I poisoned the food product you're about to consume. Download me now if you want to live.
So that's an app called Carrot Hunger, and it's the coolest thing in the world. Look up the Carrot apps. You put a little beacon in your fridge, and if you get too close to your fridge after you've already taken in your calories for the day, it'll post on your Facebook page. That's awesome, right? There's one called Carrot Fit that threatens you with rabid squirrel attacks if you don't exercise. I mean, come on, folks. These are amazing things. Ladies and gentlemen, I thank you for your time today. I hope this was useful.